Hello and welcome to the Go Tell That Story podcast, where we turn business owners just like you into unstoppable strategic storytellers. Now, what does that mean? It means telling stories that demonstrate your business impact so you can generate dream inbound leads that can't wait to work with you. Stories with insight so you can position yourself as an expert and raise your profile. And stories of inspiration so you can make an emotional connection with your audience so strong they'll happily pay a premium when the time comes to buy. Let's get started. I'm your host, Nico Ceballos-Jones. I'm so glad you're here. So without further ado, let's go tell that story. Today we're going to be hearing some stories from Matt Lazenby. Now Matt is creative director and co-founder of Lazenby Brown, an award-winning brand design business based on the Shambles in York, and he's a key figure in the region's creative scene. He's a designer, a brand strategist and an expert facilitator, a creative fellow of both the Northern School of Art and York St. John University, and a past master of the Guild of Media Arts. So he's been around a bit, he knows his stuff. Matt, how are you doing?
I'm great, Nico. Yeah, good to see you. Good to see
you. Hey, you too. You too. So now then, how do I know Matt? I know Matt. We sort of met at a kind of a sliding doors moment for me when I was like a freelancer doing mainly animation, was sort of profoundly miserable. And I was like, why am I not happy doing this at all? And a pal said, oh, you got to have a word with, just have a word with Matt Lazenby. Go and check out the Guild of Media Arts. So we kind of, I met you at a networking event, I think. Then we had a meeting. Then within that very first meeting, you were basically like, hey, why don't you come and work in our office for a bit? And it sort of spiraled from there upwards into like sparking off all sorts of, you know, really cool experiences. And I learned so much in that time. Like, what are your memories of that time?
Well, yeah, I mean, pretty much as you laid down there, it's an interesting, I'm a big believer in fate and meeting people and people come into your life for a reason. So I always do try and act on that. So, you know, I'm not at all surprised that, you know, in one meeting I was like really keen to work with this person. I always think it's so good that people do come into your life in that way and you can act on it. And we've got a bit of space here, and it was, I always knew you work along with good people, and then things just occur and happen from there. So it was a blessing to meet you, and you know, great things have happened, and you know, hairs go running off, and it's amazing what you can achieve in that way.
Yeah, it's wild. It was grateful for me to be with, like, inside an agency, kind of for the first time, certainly a design agency, the calmest agency I've ever come across. Like, no one ever seemed to get annoyed with anyone else. Everyone's just ticking away doing great work. But there was work being done on a really cool system, a framework, an approach, a strategy, whatever the heck you want to call it, that I kind of saw get ramped up over time, that I always found incredibly exciting. So we're going to dig into part of that today. So Matt, if you could just give us a bit of an elevator pitch all about Lazenby Brown, what it does, who it's for, let's hear about it.
Okay, so we're a small agency, an award-winning agency, very well established. We've been in business now approaching 17 years. I think we make a really good job of telling people stories. I think we work out the uniqueness. We help companies get close to their own uniqueness, cut through anything that looks like copying their competitors, and turn that raw material into great branding, great websites. We have our own team of developers here, great strategy and great content. That's really what we do.
Lovely stuff, and I've witnessed it firsthand. So let's dig into your thoughts about design, branding, and the bigger picture, if you're ready to tell some stories.
Great.
Right then, so as regular listeners and viewers know, this podcast is brought to you by Story Captain. We've got a massive collection of what we call strategic story cards. Each one will help you tell a different story about your audience, yourself, your business, or your industry. Now, I've sent some of these cards to Matt in advance. He's chosen the ones he's going to tell today. But when Matt tells a story, I'm going to give you listeners that unique story code, which you can then enter into the free Story Captain app, unlocking that story card. That gets you thought-provoking questions and prompts that you can use to sell your own awesome stories that your audience will love. So Matt, tell us, what's the first story you've chosen to tell today?
Well, Nico, I've gone for The Crucible of Learning.
The Crucible of Learning, a good one. I think this is the first time I've done this one on the podcast. Now, this is from the Connection Makers category. It's usually quite personal, really good for inspiring that kind of emotional connection with your audience. So, Crucible of Learning, the question is this: was there an interesting place where you learned your craft? An inspiring environment, perhaps including a great mentor that's had a really lasting impact on how you do things. So listeners, if you want to tell your own version of this story for your business, the code to enter into your Story Captain app is learning3424. That's learning3424. So Matt, tell us about your crucible of learning.
Okay, Nico. So it goes back a bit further than you've suggested there, in that my sort of environment where my ideas and my creative brain was forged and given permission to exist, really was kind of primary school, getting involved in academically not really connecting with school work as it's known, but I did have a massive interest in music and nature. And it was a very rural upbringing, quite idyllic, really. Well, very idyllic. I was clearly blossoming, interested in music. And my primary school noticed this. Very small village primary, only a few people in my year. And because of that, we had a very kind of individualistic education plan, and things were different then. You know, we're going back a long way, but I was able to get some trumpet lessons, cornet lessons, off an incredible teacher who came in just to see me. And I can remember a kind of dusty sort of like we used to do our lessons in the corridor, so dinner ladies would be going backwards and forwards, teachers would be milling about, kids would be coming out of lessons, inside lessons, and I can vividly remember my brass instructor, Mr. Jackson, sat on a chair at the end of the corridor, afternoon sun kind of streaming in onto the scene, and him playing something that I didn't know at the time, but it was Miles Davis. And to my 9-10 year old kind of brain was just absolutely it was incredible. It was incredible. That moment, that feeling, I've had many, many, many times since. But it was a definite awakening, a definite kind of interest. And through learning music, he was a massive fan of Blue Note. That got me involved in the great design of Reed Miles and those incredibly iconic designed covers, and also the work of Warhol, who was a sort of intern for Blue Note as a designer. And so that was that environment of an incredibly natural upbringing, spending a lot of time outside, a lot of time in the woods, and then jazz music sort of driving a train through that, and also combining with it. You know, because it's so the kind of tension and friction and interest of that art form really lit up my tiny brain and made me realize that the stuff that I was not that interested in terms of academic learning, that there was just there was another world, potentially the world that I was accessing, and the feelings that I got at that time, the excitement I felt, the idea of assembling parts, be they musical notes or fonts or colors, the feelings I got then are absolutely what I feel now when I'm working. So it's to use Ken Robinson's kind of phraseology, that I was in my element, and I continue to be. It continues to get me out of bed on a daily basis, and I've loved it ever since.
Amazing. Yeah, I mean, the cool thing about the thing I enjoy about these kind of more personal story cards from the Connection Makers category is that people can interpret them in different ways. Like when I wrote this one, it was about like, well, it'll be like, you know, it's your first job where you learn from a master. So to go back even further, so it's Crucible of Learning, but learning a mindset.
Yeah,
I think you use the word permission. Now we made a film in a primary school not so long ago about like creativity in kids and stuff like that. The idea that if you're not like fully interfacing with however academia is set up in that moment, some outside influence, because like it's unlikely to come from yourself, or certainly in those days with no internet, an outside influence being like, no, creativity is a thing, and it's cool. And I think crucially, you know, you used to say this link being made to where you are now and where you could be, it's not something that happens in some far off land that you won't be able to do. It's like there's someone there that's telling you, there's like exactly like you said, there's another world out there and there is a bridge that you can cross to get to it.
Yeah.
And it forms everything, and that can then spin off and then take you all the way down to, you know, exactly where you are now, pretty much.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It's a huge comfort to me to feel as happy in my own skin and at ease with my own abilities as I started to become then. So whenever I don't feel that way, it's very obvious that I've strayed into territory I shouldn't be in. So it's that if anything has guided me through my career and my life, it's that feeling. It's knowing that things feel right and good when I'm doing certain types of work, working with certain types of people. And when I don't feel like that, it's I don't have a lot of business pursuing it.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so let's move on to the more businessy stuff now.
Yeah,
because the next story is going to start to zero in on that element of the day job, the branding, the design, and what you think of it. So are you ready to tell your second story?
Yes, absolutely.
Right then, what story card have you chosen next?
So next I've looked at Mythbuster.
The Mythbuster, awesome. Now this is from our jump starter category, which is all from your audience's point of view. Great for demonstrating that you understand exactly what they're going through. Now the jump starter cards are evergreen, which means you can tell these kinds of stories over and over again with different topics and basically never run out of stuff to talk about. Now the Mythbuster question is simply this: what is something that people frequently get wrong about your service, your product, or your industry? What is effectively a limiting thought belief that's holding them back? So listeners, if you want to tell your own version of this story for your business, the code to enter into the Story Captain app is MYTH4612. That is MYTH4612. So Matt, tell us about the myth you're going to bust.
Okay. So I think one of the biggest ones is this idea of a designer as a sort of wizard, and a wizard who resides behind a curtain of kind of deceit, in a way, you know, a kind of a throne of lies. I think you know, from an early age, I always felt quite othered by the design world, and thought London was where it was at. So I was kind of establishing myself as a designer, constantly aware of the work of London agencies of a certain type. I've got to be honest, there's all types of people who would sit outside of this category, but there was definitely a breed of London designer, London agency, who carried themselves in certain ways, who wore the black polo necks, drove the certain cars, who had glass doors. And I was very clear from a young age that wasn't me, and I didn't aspire to do that or be that for a second. I set myself up in opposition to it, and I saw it for the kind of post Thatcher nonsense it was, and I thought, well, if I could actually make a case for running a small agency, being small, being particular, the humanness and northernness to a certain point that made me who I was, what if I could lean into that? And at the time, you know, going back 25 years, that was deeply suspect behavior. It wasn't. I think nowadays it's easy to think, oh well, that's what everyone does. You know what I mean? Celebrate the individual, celebrate the human. And it's like, yeah, that's very true. But back then, it was very clear that there are some amazing, brilliant agencies over here, and then there's everyone else and all that other design work. Mm. And it's clearly inferior. You know, we're doing superior work, we're making superior money, we're working with superior people. You can do everything else. Mm. And that was very much the case. And it was the work of agencies like Attic, that were Huddersfield based, but had ambitions that were completely global, and many of the individuals from that agency have gone on to huge success. In particular, Simon Dixon, who now runs Dixon Baxi, hugely important design and motion design company. But the earliest seeds of that ambition were sown by designing incredible work that they made into their own book. They took that book onto a plane, went to San Francisco, sold it to Nike and PlayStation, all these different individuals, and just said, "Sod it, you know, we'll just do this work, and we can, you know, that sense of ambition was really inspiring." And the setting where I kind of really learned this and practiced this, I'll come on to in the future cards. But in terms of the myth I want to bust, it's very much that idea that that you can pedestalize design, and this pedestalized wizard of a designer is not someone that I recognize. I see design as a craft as opposed to an art. I can't stand the waffle associated with brand and brand strategy, and I always try to shorten the chain of communication and chain of command in both the agencies I've run, the studios I've managed. I'm always trying to get the designer in the same room as the client. So I certainly don't believe in tiers of management and account management. I want to get the designers in a very close space with the clients and be able to eyeball them. And that's certainly where all my drive and inspiration comes from, is being able to work with really interesting people, discover their stories, and turn all that lovely raw material into actual great branding solutions, great communication solutions.
Love it. Yeah, it's really interesting, that idea of looking at design as a craft rather than an art. Because that's this eternal, you know, a bit of a balancing act. Because a lot of the people who get into these industries, like, we probably do regard ourselves as having some artistic traits. It's about, like, recognizing that. Almost like checking your ego, right? And recognizing that you're delivering a service for someone.
Yeah.
They're not paying to be in your presence. you know, they haven't come to see you to, like, bask in your brilliance. It's, yeah, you're trying to do something for them.
Happens. Yes,
exactly. Yeah. So it's constant. It's I remember my first real boss, like, he drummed customer service into us really hard. And he was like, it wasn't just as simple as, you know, the client's always right. It was always like, you've got to, you know, you have to find a way to do your best for them. And that kind of, that's first. And then everything else is secondary, if at all. You know what I mean?
So there's a great description of the difference between craft and art. And Mike Skinner, who's a music producer, goes under the name The Streets, really struggled with the concept of art. And when he first started his first album, really loathed the idea of art and the artist. And he saw himself as a craftsperson, probably allied to his working class roots. But he kind of discovered what the difference between art and craft was, in that he talked about his first album, and he liked to think of it as something that was useful, like how someone builds a table or a chair, and someone would build a really great thing and it would have a use. But what became clear once he got onto album 2 and 3 and 4 is that he couldn't repeat what he'd done, and that's what made it art. So, right, you know, basically something that's not repeatable, you can be sure it's art, because it's brought all those forces together, and it also could only exist at that time. So I thought, what a brilliant, well, yeah. I just thought that was a wonderful capsule of what the difference between art and craft is.
I think that's perfect. Yeah, and that kind of brings in this idea of I remember when I was, like, writing novels and stuff, being a failed novelist for about a year and a half or whatever. And a running theme throughout that was, like, when people were getting precious about their stuff, it was like, as soon as you make something and put it out there, it's down to the consumer or the audience as to decide what it is.
Yeah.
You can try and build this mega table, but they can put it out there and someone's like, what a sweet chair. That chair's all mine. And then the next person thinks it's whatever, like a statue or you know, a desk. You know what I mean? So he thought he was building a table, but then, if he was building a table, he'd have been able to repeat it then.
Yeah, he could build a table, but you can't, as anyone that's tried to make a second album knows.
Yeah, absolutely. All right then, lovely stuff. All right then, Matt, you ready to kick it up a gear and tell another story?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, nice one. What is the next story you've chosen?
The other one we're looking at now is Future Shock.
Future Shock. This is the first time we've had this one. I'm excited. It's from our credibility booster category. Now, these stories dig deeper. So when your audience craves more information and they're sort of hungry for great industry level thought leadership. So a good challenge, this. The question is simply, what do you think could be completely commonplace in the future within your industry, but if it happens suddenly today, it would blow people's minds? So listeners, if you want to take a crack at this, tell your own version of this story for your business, the code to enter into the Story Captain app is SHOCK5158. That is SHOCK5158. So Matt, Tell us about your future shock.
Well, it was, I hadn't actually thought of this until, you know, you gave me a selection of, you know, going through the story cards and looking for those titles. And I thought, yeah, what is on the horizon? You know, what will actually serve to diminish our service in the future? How will people get design in the future in different ways? And I think what we're seeing with AI and visual art at the moment is really incredible. It's shocking. It's interesting. It's very contentious as to whether, you know, people using AI are artists. Are they creative at all? You know, where does the creativity live? Does it live in the machine? It is really fascinating. And also that colliding with the homogenization of design and Insta trends, which are now speeding up. So certain colors will come in and out of fashion 2 or 3 months at a time. Typefaces will come in and out of fashion in the same pace. You know, back when my career started, that sort of thinking was just absolutely crazy. A lot of designers who I studied with and was inspired by were working on typefaces that were inspired by Swiss modernism and a lot of the movements of the 40s and 50s, and you know, just absolutely incredible that we're now moving at such an incredible click rate. It's it is really interesting. But what it makes, you know, on the top level, there's this absolute endless development and endless appetite for what's new. And by new, I mean, you know, weeks, days, months old. I'm not talking even years. And I think AI in the future is going to make a really easy job of just being able to say, well, this is my company name. I want three different brand palettes. Just click go, and it'll, you know, this is my mobile number, these are all my handles, you know, give me three different business card designs and all the rest of it. Absolutely terrifying. So on the one hand, I'm terrified and sad for the industry and the kind of innocence of my career, which has seen this kind of arc from when I first started. My earliest jobs were helping digitize traditional studios. So it was, you know, it was the start of the Mac finding its way into studios. So my first jobs were going into traditional design studios, folding away drawing boards, putting away pens, you know, and wheeling out Macs and dealing with that whole kind of that whole crossover. And obviously the individuals I was working with, the more senior designers at the time, must have felt very similarly, that it's like, oh great, you know, you just choose 60 fonts like that and you just bring up all those colors, and you know, they must have seen it as the same shortcut, the same kind of like, oh, it's not real design though, is it? You know, so it's interesting that I'm kind of now going through the same thing. But what I would emphasize, and what I would certainly is the marrow of the talks I give in universities and colleges for people that have creative subjects and work with creative people, is that it's always about it's never about that kind of, it's like Star Wars, right? It's the, you know, it's the kind of quick and easy path of the dark side versus the hard work of the force and the goodies. We as an agency will always focus on the underlying, the substance, the human, the particular, the individual, the odd, and we will always work on that and turn it into something that is as timeless as it can be, as opposed to something that's going to be faddy or connected to something that's going to get kind of traction on social media or anything, you know, onto platforms, whether it's Pinterest or whatever. So we're always looking for the deeper and something that's going to be more affecting to an audience. So that's certainly what I fear, but I do also see that it's the natural graveyard for this particular type of design. It is a fitting end to this sort of kind of fast food notion of design. So it's kind of a blessing and a curse, I think. I don't know what you think about it.
Yeah, well, and that's really interesting. I think you've summed it up really well. And there's definitely, there's echoes across every industry. Any kind of service industry, right, has to have this in their, at, almost at the forefront of their mind, because things are moving so fast. And I was talking to a copywriter about the AI writing side of things. I think at the moment, that's the only one I've really dabbled in.
Yeah.
But it just, it felt dirty to me. But then you have to come back to that mindset that we discussed earlier, where it's like, look, if I'm getting good at using Jasper to write articles, I'm not getting good at writing. I'm getting good at using Jasper.
Yeah.
And at the moment, it's a bit shonky and kind of weird and not terribly nice to use, but that won't last very long. Soon it'll be great.
Yeah.
So you have to think, you can't take it as it lies, right?
Oh, no.
Play to where the ball, you think the ball might be. Best
the
uncanny
valley is getting smaller.
Well, that's our thing. So what happens when people can make video content? Not that our services are setting it up, partly for this reason. You know, is our service isn't all about video content. But what happens when you can have make a 3D avatar of yourself that is completely indistinguishable from the real thing, and you can get it to say what you want, and you can use AI to tell it what to say? What happens then? Mm. What happens when you can click a button saying the kind of article you want to write, and it just gets done? The kind of logo you want, and it just gets done? And my kind of guess is that at the point where that's possible, it'll be hard to use, but it'll get easier. It'll be expensive to use, but it'll get cheaper, to the point where anyone in the world can just put forth a brilliant facade.
Yeah.
That if everyone does it the same way, is indistinguishable. So all these distinguishable factors can no longer be relied upon to distinguish you from anyone, unless you go with what might be called an artisanal supplier. Someone who is doing something that is at least noticeably different, or does it in a way that is niched to what you need and what you stand for, in a way that can't be done when it's AI that needs to do it for everyone. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's my hope, and it's but the problem is, I don't think we can really imagine yet how that might look like for service-based industries, not with the metaverse around the corner and all that kind of thing. So it's constantly trying to guess at where it is. It's but that's sort of how it should be. That should keep you on your toes to an extent.
Definitely.
Yeah. All right. Good. So the future's coming, folks. There's no two ways about it. So look, we'll leave behind that dystopian nightmare of homogenized design and creativity, and we're going to take a little interlude, and we're going to let you talk now, Matt, about like a little spotlight on something that's happening in your business right now. What do you want to shine a light on? What do you want to talk about?
For the past 6 or 7 years as an agency, we've been very kind of restlessly looking at how we can R&D ourselves, and what's good about what we do, what's particular and different. Try to find the value, locate the value in the business and the service. People really like it, they really enjoy working with us. So we're trying to work out, right, what is it that we do? How can we turn that into something that could be used by others? And brand personality is the kind of product of that. So brandpersonality.co.uk is the web address, and that's basically a completely white labeled, there's no Lazenby Brown over there, it's all completely its own thing, but what it really is a way that any creative can access a very simple strategic process, a repeatable workshop that helps them get to where their clients, helps them interrogate and engage clients in the same way we do. So it's a set of principles. It's a very simple process. It's an hour long workshop that you can perform with a client to get a consensus across a group on what is the creative direction of a project, what is the raw material that sits behind the project, what's the personality of the project before you do any design work at all. So for us, it's been incredibly helpful to be able to frame and give clients a frame of reference for the work that we deliver. So they have a heads up on what's to come, but also they can see themselves in that work instantly. So in many ways, it's removing the curtain from the wizard completely. It's allowing any member of staff from a business, giving them a spotlight to talk about their experience, their lived experience of a business, be able to attribute it to one of Carl Jung's archetypes. We use up to 60 different archetypes, which are nothing more complicated than characters in a book or characters in a film or people you might meet in the street. But giving people those phrases really helps them talk about the type of business they are. We can then collect that, turn it into a report, allow that that brand council to agree on that's the personality, that's who we are, and then the designer, the creative team, can then take that forward and create work from it. And as long as they, that's the kind of open goal. As long as they shoot for that goal, and the client can see themselves in the work that's been produced, it's a very effective way of reducing upset in the design process, reducing iterations, and the whole production delivery process becoming really tiresome and expanded. Great way of developing confidence from the clients in what you're doing, and a great way of designers leading that creative process as well, rather than looking to clients to do it for them.
Yeah, I really dig it, as you know, and this was the process that I saw being developed over time that I always just loved the look of, because I like good systems and ambitious systems. But I've seen you give talks on this, and it's just, it does a lot of things, as well as what you said. It's like, it's an easy thing to get real quick. And I've seen audiences just be like, just listen to your talk for ages on this and be really engaged with it, ask tons of questions, because it's exciting as well. It's fun. I think possibly the coolest thing it does is it does give a lot of power to the client in those early stages, which if you don't have a system and you're trusting in the design wizard, where you like, you pour out your heart and you're like, you're just hoping for the best. But if you've got multiple people in the room who are all can choose their own archetypes, and some people might never have been asked for their opinion before.
Yeah.
And because people can choose some things that are personal to them, a group does it. Everyone picks their cards, right? And people can have different opinions that all kind of feed into each other, and people feel seen. But it gives them that power of being like, okay, look, this is my experience of this thing.
Yeah.
And it's about them. It's about their experiences, their feelings, and their dreams, and all this stuff, and it all feeds in together. And it's just, it's very cool. So I'd encourage listeners to go and check that out for sure. And it probably like a bit of an influence in around, even though we didn't get to the card stuff in Story Captain.
Mm.
At least it's this idea of building a process and some IP beyond just, because without it, you could be a very good agency, but you don't actually have any assets.
Yes, yes.
Beyond the, you know, if your head designer goes, then that's your asset, sort of toast, right?
Yeah,
but definitely. The methodology, the system. And also, that's the thing that it's not. It like you said, you've spun that off into a separate thing. It could be delivered in loads of different ways.
Yes.
Workshops, physical cards, digital courses,
online,
whatever the heck.
Yes.
So that then is a method of as kind of future proofing beyond, not just, but you know, being solely selling your money, selling your time for money, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So very cool. So go and check that out. Brandpersonality.co.uk, right?
That's it.
Okay, there we go. Lovely stuff. Right then, we've got two more stories to tell if you're up for it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Fantastic. All right then. This is going to fit in quite nicely. You've chosen a good set here that basically tell a totally complete story. So now we're going to zero in on the next story, which is...
Who do you serve?
So now we're going to dig into really... the core of this. So look, this is from our brand builder category. These stories dig right under the skin of what your business is all about. Very powerful when it comes to building a following, but you need real clarity of thought to pull them off. So the question is, let's talk about your absolute ideal client, why you're uniquely well placed to deliver for them. Now, if you're truly passionate about helping your audience and you understand what drives them, this is your chance to prove it. Listeners, if you want to tell your own version of this story for your business, the code to enter into your Story Captain app is SERVE4012. That is SERVE4012. So tell us, Matt, now I'm going to get you to do this ever so slightly differently. So I think we've covered really well the systems and processes, your outlook, and how you deliver your work. So let's really nail into the kinds of businesses that can benefit from this way of thinking, who might have been caught in this kind of, oh, I have to engage a designer. It's potluck as to who we get. So what kind of clients can really benefit from this? Where are they at the moment? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think it really is a huge variety of people, but we've worked within heritage organisations like York Minster and English Heritage as well. We've also worked in organisations which are within the sort of food and drink industry in particular. And it's the best way to say it is that if you have a board structure which has separation between workers and board members, as you know most businesses do of a certain size, and you or you're growing your business to a point where it's bigger than yourself now, and you're looking around thinking, why don't they do it like I do it? Why do I have to do everything? Why have I got to be there in order for the brand experience, as I understand it, to be delivered? So we help individuals, owner managers, we help lift all that stuff out of themselves and turn it into a set of assets and a brand and a document and supportive assets as well. So we do that with the help of their own workforce. So their own workforce, who they might deem to be not great at marketing or don't understand design or maybe have terrible choice in curtains or whatever, it's that all those people are literally delivering the brand experience to your customers on a day-to-day basis, whether you like it or not. And they're doing it with what few tools they have, which is what so-and-so said that is the way they've done it, or we've always done that, and whatever induction they got on their first day. So the brand personality approach helps people absolutely quantify and capture that all the personality of the business. It's drawn from the members of staff who feel completely engaged in the workshop and the process. It's then reflected back to that same group. So the owner manager there's very little hierarchy in that workshop. So everyone gets the same experience. We get that group consensus. Huge amount of energy is created and released as a result of that, and a huge amount of confidence, because it's sort of like, this is who we genuinely are. We're not just looking a bit like so-and-so and changing the name. This is who we genuinely are. This work was created from our words and our ideas and our aspirations as to what we want to be, and let's go and do it. And that's much better position than being a kind of over-anxious owner manager, stressed out, no time to do anything, and just wondering how you, without using osmosis, make people behave like you, or do it like you used to do it in the old days when it was just you in the shop or whatever. So that's a kind of owner manager story, but it really is true across different sorts of organizations. And the other way in which this is perfect is for place branding. So if you're a town or a city or a village, and you need to get a group of people together and decide what the personality of that place is, that's another great, this is another great way of doing it. So it's really a clever way to get large groups of people to agree on intangible stuff, which normally becomes tangible too quickly. So you might get a parish council together and show them logo one and logo B, and logo A, logo B, and it's all personal, subjective stuff. Saying, "Oh, I like blue. It's I've always liked blue," rather than gathering that those stories of the people that have lived there, the experiences, the atmosphere of the business or place, and turning that atmosphere into something that's tangible, getting the group to agree on it, and then allowing the creative team, giving them the brief they've always dreamed of, a brief with substance and with something actually actionable in it, not just a list of requirements. So it's that I hope that gives you a bit of an idea as to who would be ideal for it.
Yeah, it does. It does. It makes perfect sense. And in fact, I'm going to get you to sum it up, I think, in the next story. If you're ready to round this off.
Absolutely, yeah.
Awesome. So tell us what the final story is. And it's just going to be it's going to be the coda to that whole thing, I think. So yeah, what's the final story, Matt?
So it's before and after.
Before and after. It's a classic. So what you kind of had over the past half an hour of this chat is a really nuanced picture of everything. And often the harder thing to do is kind of drill it all down and sum it up in a real short, sharp shock that can... as the name suggests, calls to action, because that's what this story is from. It's from the calls to action category, which is all about asking your audience to do something that should edge them closer, ultimately, to buying from you, or at least along the buying journey. So it has to happen at some point, folks, so don't shy away from it. It's all about business after all. So the question here is, can you paint a vivid picture of how your audience might be feeling if they're experiencing all the problems you can solve? And then, in a hot second, an equally vivid picture of how they'll be feeling if they were to work with you, if everything then goes right. You know what I mean? So listeners, if you want to tell your own version of this story for your business, the code to enter into the Story Captain app is before and after 7144. That is before and after 7144. So Matt, if you could sum up and put a full stop on that whole really interesting passage we just had, you know, how are people feeling now? How could they feel a couple of weeks down the line?
Yeah, absolutely. So a lot of people call us, and a lot of this is true of the website side of the business. So typically, and a huge number of websites exist like this, there's an organization who have a website that they're not particularly happy with, they don't use very much, and they just hope that no one looks at it very often, really. There's a news story on there from like two Christmases ago, and it's all a bit sad, and they think if they don't talk about it, no one will talk about it, no one will worry about it, and they can just ignore that it even exists. If you trace back the kind of genesis of that website, there's normally a company who are now selling static caravans, who have kind of originally set up as a web design company. They might not even exist. Someone's just taken the monthly fees for domain and virus checking and God knows what else. And no one even knows where the passwords are. And it's just a nightmare. So we're very used to taking those calls and then starting to unpack with that company, there's a website here that's been neglected. What is that? Is that a thread of how you feel about the appearance of the business as a whole? And very often it is. There's a lack of confidence. There's a lack of understanding about the power of design and communication. There's no real contact with the audience. There's no power or even evidence of social media, and those stories just aren't being told. So sometimes it goes that way around, where it will start with a kind of hot mess of a website that then turns into a lifetime of support for the communications and branding of that business, and very often it does. So most of our clients are very long-term clients, 10 years plus. Where we just work with them little and often, keeping things fresh, keeping them interesting, taking them proactively creating work where we're actually taking things to them that we think that would be of interest, looking at collaborations between clients, that happens very often as well. So to paint a kind of before and after picture, you've got the before of the kind of almost just embarrassed to look in the mirror, the design mirror of like, I'm going to take all the mirrors out of my house so I never have to look at my business because it's just so ugly. And then this kind of after picture of seeing yourself everywhere, catching reflections of your business in windows as you pass, thinking this is who I am, and having such pride and confidence in that fact. And being so happy that you and every single person connected to the culture of your business is on exactly the same page, and they're all invested and interested in this progressive living business that you've created. You know, it's that's the after.
I love it. So there you go. That sums it all up perfectly. That was really interesting, and that's done it nicely. So thanks for coming on, Matt. I really appreciate it.
You're very welcome. Good to see you, Nico.
Nice one. Oh, hey, how was your experience of using the Story Captain strategic story card as a way of drawing out some of these things?
Yeah, I mean, it's fantastic. It dovetails really well with our brand personality service. It's something that I'm always keen to engage with, because it helps us tell those stories. It helps us as humans. We're very apt to have empty heads, and we look at blank pieces of paper and we think, well, what now? So any starter for 10 is just incredible. Once we get the thread, we're off. You know, we're all really good at it. We're all way better than we think we are, but we just need a start. And I think that's what these cards give us, is it helps us frame stories, build a proper story arc, I think it's a brilliant thing.
Nice one. Well, yeah, that kind of is the point, especially when you deal with business owners, and who don't need to be like charismatic, brilliant talkers, brilliant writers. Like you said, they've already got everything they need. Yeah. They just need like as we maybe said right at the start, permission to go off on one, and then just be directed, because all that stuff's in there. They know what they're doing. They're fanatical about helping their audience. They're brilliant at delivering solutions. It's just like structuring it, multiplying it, getting it out there.
Absolutely.
Awesome. All right. Well, thanks again for your time, Matt. Speak to you soon. Cheers.
Well, see you later.
Okay, that's all for today. But if you'd like to find out more about what our business does, head to storycaptain.co.uk, where you can take the Unstoppable Storyteller Quiz. Find out where your own storytelling strengths lie and what you need to do to start getting results. And don't forget the free app where you can start unlocking story cards right now. But that's not all. If you want to become truly unstoppable, there's a killer service where in one magic hour a month, we can interview you remotely and turn your stories into incredible, authentic content for you, all ready to rock on your social profiles. That's all strategically driven by our five-step unstoppable method that removes the pain from the process, gets you all the rewards of story-driven content. We're talking dream inbound leads, elevated respect in your industry, and the freedom to charge more for what you do. That is storycaptain.co.uk. I will see you there. Until then, I've been Nico Ceballos-Jones, and it simply remains for me to say, go tell that story.